Parshas Korach. Okay, as we like to do in this class, as I like to do, is to take apart a few psukim, a few verses which we're either familiar with or not so familiar with, and look through them more in depth and understand at greater levels that which we, or hopefully we'll understand at greater levels that from what we did before. So the bulk of the parsha is taken up with the story of Korach, the rebellion of Korach and his followers, Dathan and Aviram. He gets other people involved, 250 leaders, and they basically challenge the authority of Moshe, the authority of Aharon, that Moshe has taken for himself the leadership of the Jewish people. It's on page 820, the parsha begins. The ability of Moshe to have appointed his brother Aharon as a Kohen Gadol, and he basically takes issue with that. There's much to discuss as far as exactly what his argument was, what the sages have to say about that. I'm going to leave that aside for this year. I can't remember if we've done that in past years or not. Maybe we'll do that in subsequent years. But what I'd like to focus on this week is Moshe's response. Moshe has a series of psukim in terms of what his response is to this challenge of his authority. His response is a little bit longer than what we'll get to this morning, but let's at least start with that response that he has. So it's going to pick up on the first page of the parasha right away. Korach's response, Korach's initial challenge is only three verses long. The Torah describes the entire initial threat and challenge to Moshe in the first three verses of the parasha. We'll just read it through without going through in depth, but just to get a sense of what it is that he's doing. Korach, the son of Itzar, separated himself with Dathan and Aviram, who were the sons of Eliab and On, the son of Peleth, the offspring of Reuven. So the Torah gives us a brief listing of who the players are involved in this initial rebellion. They stood before Moshe with 250 men from the children of Israel, leaders of the assembly, those summoned for meeting, men of renown. So the Torah describes that the people who they got to join the rebellion were people of stature, leaders, people of those who had been called for specific meetings, and we will leave that all aside for now. They gathered together against Moshe and against Aharon and said to them, now I'll foreshadow some of the things that we will be talking about. Who did they gather against? The Torah makes it clear. It's both Moshe and Aharon, equally attacked. What do they say to them? It is too much for you, for the entire assembly, all of them are holy, and Hashem is among them. Why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? Now again, if we were focusing on these verses, we would break that down phrase by phrase, as we like to do, exactly what their arguments were. For our purposes this morning, they basically challenge the authority. It's too much. You have taken more than your share. You, Moshe, you're the king. You've given your brother Aharon the authority of the holiness of the position of the Kohen Gadol. Yet we are all holy. The entire people are holy. Why do we have leaders like you who have exalted yourself over us? And in so doing, they basically challenge the authority of Moshe and Aharon. So that's the setup on a basic level, as far as for what we need. Let's pick up with verse 4, Pasuk Dalet, and work through. So what I want to do, as we often do, let's read a couple of psukim straight through, get an overview of what Moshe is going to respond, and then break it back down with some of the questions if we wanted to know more information, the kind of questions that we would ask to see what we'll cover, and then we'll go through Rashi and the Ramban and see how they dealt with our questions. So let's learn through a couple of the psukim together. Let's do the first four or five together. Pasuk Dalet, Vayishma Moshe Vayipol al panav. Moshe heard and fell on his face. What questions would we ask on this? Even though
why?
I just said we were going to read.
Why? Because they challenged him.
That's okay. An answer. Good. Excellent. You're giving an answer. He's asking a question. What's your question?
Why did he fall
on his face? What's the meaning, significance, symbolism of Moshe falling on his face? Excellent. Question number one. Question number two. Where's Aharon? Who was challenged? Both Moshe and Aharon were challenged. The Torah is clear in verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, Vayikohalu al Moshe v'al Aharon. They gathered together against Moshe and against Aharon. And yet when we find the initial response, who's falling on his face? It's just Moshe, not Aharon. So excellent. So we're going to have to deal with these two questions. Why is Moshe falling on his face? What does that mean? What's the symbolism of that? And two, where is Aharon? Whatever it means that Moshe fell on his face, where is Aharon? Good. Five, let's go on. He spoke to Korach and to his entire assembly saying, who's speaking? You've got to assume that's Moshe, right? Moshe was the last pronoun mentioned as he's the one who fell on his face. So Moshe now speaks to Korach and to his entire assembly saying, in the morning, Boker, V'yoyda Hashem es asher lo. Hashem will make known the one who is his own. V'es ha-kadosh, and the Holy One. And he will draw him close to himself. Pay attention to the capital H's and lowercase H's. And he, and Hashem, will draw him, the one who he has chosen, close to himself. Close to Hashem himself. And whomever he will choose, he will draw close to himself. There are a lot of pronouns in this verse. Tricky. Let's just try to break it down just in plain English. What is being said in this verse? Before we ask our questions, let's just break down. What if you have to rephrase this in plain English, trying to explain to a fifth grader what in the world did Moshe just say? Let's break it down. What did he just say?
Hashem will decide.
Excellent. All right. Most basic. Hashem will decide. Perfect. Now let's start adding to this. When will Hashem decide? In the morning. So the first thing we have is, right now we're having a conversation, says Moshe, we're not going to decide this right now, we're going to decide this in the morning. Who's going to decide? Hashem. Now, who is he going to decide? How many different categories of people will Hashem choose as the ones whom he's deciding about? Sounds like two. What are those two? What words in this, they're working through the English phrase.
The one who is his, and the one who is holy.
Right? Excellent. Right? Let's look at that first phrase. Hashem will, in the morning, Hashem will make known the one who is his own, and the Holy One. So we seem to have two people who are going to be chosen in the morning, or it could be one person with two characteristics, but there's certainly two categories that we're going to be determining in the morning. The one who is his own, the one who belongs to Hashem, and the one who is holy. And then what will happen to the person who is determined as the one who is Hashem's and the one who is holy? What will happen to that person? Hashem will draw him close to himself. Okay, so far so good as we're breaking it down. In the morning, Hashem will choose his two characteristics, the one who is his own, the one who is holy. He will draw himself close to that person. Then how does the verse conclude?
And he will choose.
Okay. That's repetitive. Okay, that for sure we're going to have to deal with. So if we broke down this pasuk, we will now have the following aspects of the verse. When will this... The most basic is, as Sam said, Hashem is going to choose. So again, let's put it back in our context that this is Moshe's response to the rebellion. First thing that Moshe does when he responds is he
falls
down. Opening response to the rebellion is Moshe falls on his face. That left us with the question of why is he falling on his face and where is Aharon? Good. Now we have that initial response. Moshe's on the ground. He's by himself. He's fallen on his face. Now he speaks. What's the essence of what he says? That's what Sam's comment was. The essence of his response is Hashem will choose. Don't put this on my head. The essence of his response is Hashem will choose. Let's fill in the details. When will Hashem choose? In the morning. How many people or how many characteristics will Hashem choose? Two. The one who is his own and the one who is holy. What will he do with those choices? He will draw himself close. And then we have a repetitive phrase at the end. He seems to repeat the same thing, that he will draw close the one whom he has chosen. So far so good? Okay, questions on this verse that we haven't yet touched on?
How did Moshe know that this was going to happen?
Good. How did Moshe know that this was going to happen? Was there any dialogue that we are not told about between Hashem and Moshe that told Moshe to do this? Like, how did Moshe know that in the morning Hashem is going to do this? Excellent. That's going to be a question we have to deal with. Any other questions on this verse?
Hashem originally appointed Moshe and Aaron. Aaron, originally appointed.
Okay.
So does he have to make it? Is it proper to ask Hashem to decide again?
Great. In other words, why is Moshe the leader and why is Aaron the Kohen Gadol right now? Did he make that up?
No, Hashem appointed him in the first place.
So instead of Moshe responding, I didn't make this up. Hashem told me. He seems to be creating a new sort of test to choose again. We'll deal with that question. Also an excellent question. We're going to see Rashi's going to address that question exactly. There's a more obvious problem with this verse that you're skipping over. It's not a technical problem, it's a conceptual problem. Some of the problems of verses, we have like repetitive words or phrases. Conceptually, what's wrong with this? What's odd about this verse? Yes. Put yourself in a desert right now. The most significant rebellion has just taken place. Korach brings a party of over 250 people, himself, Dathan and Aviram, and On ben Peleth, three major leaders, 250 leaders. They come to Moshe and they say, Moshe, you're a charlatan and a quack. You appointed yourself the leader, and Aharon, your brother, the Kohen Gadol, you had no right to do that. We're all holy. Who gave you this authority? And Moshe responds, right? So put yourself in the moment.
Why now?
Excellent. Right now you have all these people sitting here saying, right? Everyone's like, wow, Moshe's authority was just challenged and these people are coming. And what does Moshe say? In the morning, Hashem is going to choose. What should happen now? Right now it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And so everyone's like gathered together. There's this huge confrontation taking place. Moshe's authority was just challenged. Everyone's like, they hear that collective gasp of 3 million people. And everybody wants to see what's Moshe going to do, right? Is there going to be a lightning bolt out of the sky? What's going to happen now? And what does Moshe say? Please disperse. There is nothing to see here. Everybody back to your tents. Please quiet down. Don't worry. Come back tomorrow morning.
Doesn't really say tomorrow.
Yeah. In the morning. In implication of in the morning is going to be tomorrow morning. You think it might be even further in the morning? Like 3 days later?
Maybe he's giving Korach time to
die. Okay, you're giving an answer. Let's just put it on the table. Okay. I do like answers. I don't mind answers. If you have a good answer, I'm open there. And that's a fair suggestion. We will see that as going to be one of our possibilities. But let's just put on the table the problems that we need to deal with. If you had such a massive rebellion, and he sends everybody home. He says, don't worry about it, everything is fine, we'll come back in the morning and we'll address it. Or not just we, Hashem is going to decide. So let's add to our questions. Again, we have, why is Moshe falling on his face? Where is Aharon? Why is this happening first tomorrow morning? What about right now? Let's address this right here and right now. Moshe is not interested in doing that. And we have then the repetitive phrase at the end of the pasuk, like that the one who we chose is going to come close, and that seems to be repeated twice. And we have the question of, how did Moshe know to do this? How did he know this was going to happen? So far, so good? I mean, okay. So far, so good as far as keeping track of all of our problems. So if we don't have any answers, yeah.
No, I was just thinking that, if they're already challenging Moshe, and he tells them to go away and come back in the morning, if they're doubting his authority to begin with, then what's to say that they're going to listen to him and go back to their homes? And
excellent, right? Just adding to the question of his response. In other words, we have everybody here. It's of note. We're going to need an answer why he's not addressing it now. 100%. How does he know they're going to, like, why is he doing this way? 100%.
I guess it doesn't have to do, because the ritual, that morning would be the normal time that Aharon would take a fire pan and light, put incense in it and light. And so he's saying, okay, tomorrow morning when it's the time to do that,
you're giving an answer.
Yeah,
right, you're giving an answer. We haven't even gotten in the verse to the process. In other words, verse 5, there are two rules in this class. One is you can't look underneath the line that separates the top half from the bottom half. and two, you can't read ahead of me. That's not fair. That's fine. You happen to be correct. In other words, we're going to see, as often is the case, when we have good questions, there are often various solutions. So, like the two of you, Elaine... the two of you have just said various possibilities. Elaine is saying maybe he's just stalling for time. You're saying, well, maybe it's part of a process. You're both going to be touching on things we're going to see in Rashi and the Ramban. So you're right. Just hold off. Right now already, the first thing that Moshe says is, before he even tells him what to do, he just says, it's going to happen in the morning. That's the first thing out of Moshe's mouth is, go home, we'll do this tomorrow.
I don't see where it says go home.
Maybe they'll camp out at night though, all night. But all you know is right now it's clearly nothing is going to happen until the following morning. So I'm you're right. I'll put that on my head. I'm adding that he's basically telling them to go home. But I mean, maybe he wants them all to hang out there the whole night. That's a possibility. I'm fine. Either way, my main point is he's not going to address it now, and he's going to say we're going to address this tomorrow morning.
Effectively, it's a cooling off period.
Correct. Now, is that his only purpose or is that part of the purpose 100%? But it's a cooling off period, which is interesting. If the authority is being chosen, what's he giving everybody a whole night to sit on? What about all the other people? In other words, maybe for Korach he needs a cooling off period. But you got 3 million people who just watched the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu being challenged, and they're all going to go home at night thinking, wow, did you see what happened down at the tent today? You know, Korach got up there and Moshe didn't say anything. He just said, come back tomorrow. He's leaving open all of that, the chit-chat that's going to take place in the tent that night. He's leaving it there. He's not addressing it right here and right now. So we'll leave that just as a question. Why is he doing that? What's the purpose of that? Let's just read two more verses. What Eleanor already referred to, but let's just read it together in verse 6. Zosasu, Moshe now tells them what's going to happen in the morning, what they're going to do. So everyone should take for themselves fire pans, Korach and his entire assembly. Usnuva and Eish, and we will put fire in them. The Simu Alehem Kitores, and then you will put incense on the fire which is now in your pans. Lefnei Hashem, you will burn them. Mochar, we'll do this tomorrow. V'hayo ha'ish asher yivchar Hashem, hu ha'kadosh. Rav Lechem b'nei Levi. Then the man whom Hashem will choose, he is the Holy One. Apparently, somehow through this process, Hashem will let it be known whose incense offering has been accepted and who has not. Verse does not tell us how that will happen. We're not sure what we're supposed to be looking for. Tomorrow they'll have fire pans, there'll be fire, they'll put incense in. What's going to determine the winner? We don't know whether or not it's the one whose smoke rises, whether or not the one who catches fire, whether or not, I don't know what's going to happen, but clearly there will be a method in which Hashem will decide based on this process whom is the one that he is choosing. It is too much for you, offspring of Levi. And Moshe concludes this remark by saying, this is too much, offspring of Levi. Okay, that's how, any other comments you want to make on these last couple verses?
Is that Moshe that's saying that it is too much for you?
Yes. This is all the quote from, this is Moshe's initial response. If you see just verse 8, it's going to begin again. Moshe said to Korach, Moshe is still not finished speaking, but this is an end of a quote. And for our time this morning, let's deal with this. This is Moshe's initial response to the rebellion. So on the table, let's add to Danny, right? First thing, yeah. Let's add this last verse to Danny's question. He said, how did Moshe know that in the morning something was going to happen? Let's add to that, how did Moshe know that they were allowed to do this? Moshe now has everybody taking fire pans, offering up incense, and somehow the winner is going to be the one that's chosen as the real high priest or the real one that's being chosen. And so how did you know to do this? Are you allowed to do this anytime you want? Well, what right do you have to do? Who's the last person who offered up something that wasn't allowed? Right? Aaron's sons. What happened to them? Right? Puff. There's the end of them. Now, Moshe is having... Who's included in this test?
All
250. And Korach and the leaders, and who else?
Aaron
is also, right? Because if Moshe wants Aaron to be the one who's chosen, he's got to be thrown into the mix. So Moshe is now having Aaron also be involved in something which wasn't necessarily prescribed anywhere. We certainly don't have any record anywhere of Moshe being told to do this. So let's add to Danny's question, who said, well, how did Moshe know in the morning anything was going to happen? How did he know specifically to tell everybody to do this so that in the morning it would be determined what would happen? Fair question?
Are we still doing questions?
Yes. Do you have answers?
I had a thought of an answer, but I won't get it.
Okay.
We have a very strict teacher.
Yeah. If you're going to start giving all the answers, like, what am I supposed to be doing here? Okay. So far, so good. The question, that's our issue. So I want to set up three major questions. And then we have the other minor ones that we've asked. So three major questions that I'd like to ask are, Moshe's falling on his face. What's the meaning of Moshe falling on his face?
Humiliation.
He was humiliated.
Yeah.
You're giving answers already. That's fine. We'll get back to that.
No answers.
We'll get back to that. We're not ready for answers yet. So we have, why did Moshe fall on his face? Why did Moshe wait till the morning? And how did Moshe know to do this process? Those are the major three questions. We have some technical questions in the text, some repetitive phrases and verses, and we have the double language of the one who Hashem chose and the one who is holy. We have some of those types of questions, which are important questions, which we'll get to, God willing. The major questions, the questions that if we took it out of the text, just going over the story, why is Moshe falling without Aharon? Meaning, let's all put that as part of that question. Why Moshe by himself? Why is this process waiting till the morning? And how did Moshe know to do this process anyway?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I haven't read ahead like some people, so... So I have a question.
Yeah.
What does he mean by, it is too much for you?
Excellent. Okay, we didn't really even ask that question. Like, what exactly did he mean by that phrase, it is too much for you, sons of Levi? What's the meaning of that in his final statement of this initial response? What does it sound like he means? I'm willing to take an answer. One second, let's finish this thought. What does it sound like he means when he says it's too much for you, sons of Levi? Rebuking them.
So you're not up to the task.
You're not up to the task. You've bit off more than you can chew on this one. Rashi's going to comment like, now you're taking on God himself because you're claiming that as if I made this up on my own when really it was Hashem who made it up. So you're really getting involved in a big dispute over here. We'll see if we can have a feeling in mind. I guess for time for that. But yeah, that's a fair another question. Like, what exactly did he mean with that part of his response? So his response, I guess we would say then, is three parts. He falls on his face. He says to them, I'm going to do a test. And we're going to see that Hashem is going to choose the winner. And then he has this rebuke of, this is too much for you, sons of Levi. So it's really, I guess, a three-pronged response of, he falls on his face, he puts forth the test, and he tells them, you've taken off too much already on this one. Excellent. Okay, yeah, another question.
When he says this is too much for you, is this the same lashon that Korach used to accuse?
Excellent, right. We skip briefly over the beginning of the parasha, but they say to him, Korach says to Moshe, you took too much. Rav Lochem, and Moshe uses that exact same phrase to say to Korach, you took too much. Excellent. Correct. A wonderful insight. All right, let's get started. Okay, let's start with Rashi and the Ramban. Let's work through how they address some of these issues. We're going to have a couple of different approaches, and you'll let me know if at the end it's got a little bit too technical and too confusing, but I hope it will not. I photocopied some Ramban. We'll read it inside a little bit as well. All right, let's start with Rashi. Let's start with Vayipol al Ponov. Pasuk Dalas, this is all translated, but if you want to follow me inside, I'm on the second column of Rashi on page 820. Pasuk Dalid, what's that? 2, 4, 6, 7, or 8 lines from the bottom. Vayipol al Ponov. Rashi says, Vayipol al Ponov, let's read before we start Rashi. What are our options? Why would Moshe be falling? How many different possibilities are there that Moshe would be falling to the ground? We had one. What did Ezra say? He was humiliated? Possibility number one would be he was humiliated. He just had a situation in which his authority was challenged. He is embarrassed, ashamed, humiliated. He could fall on his face. That would be one possibility. What else do we have?
Why would he be ashamed or embarrassed or humiliated if Hashem appointed him?
We can argue on that, but that's, I'm just throwing a possibility. What else? What would be some of the other reasons?
This is his actual conversation
with
Hashem.
Prayer. Sometimes we find prophets falling to their face in form of prayer. Yes, yeah, so we could have Moshe falling to his face in a form of prayer. Excellent. What else can we have?
He was just shocked.
Shocked. Anything else?
Despair.
Now, shock is different than despair. So it could be falling to the ground out of despair of this challenge, another one of the many challenges that he's been facing. So it could be humiliation, it could be despair, it could be prayer, it could be shock. One more that's missing. When else would a person fall to the ground?
They could faint.
They could faint. Okay. What is it a sign of? Any one other sign?
Humility.
Humility. Excellent. These are all possibilities. Now, as we work through these possibilities, let's remember who falls and who doesn't fall.
Moshe
falls and Aharon doesn't. So as we try to figure out what are the reasons possible why Moshe is falling, it's of note that whatever we're going to come up with, Moshe falls and Aharon apparently doesn't. So we have on the table a number of possibilities. It could be prayer, it could be humility, it could be despair, shock, humiliation. There are a couple of different things out there that are possible, but it's only Moshe who's falling and not anybody else. Yeah.
Aharon wasn't there.
Wasn't
You don't know that he was there.
Well, it seems in verse 2 in Pasuk Beis it says, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong pasuk. In Gimel, in 3, Vayikohalu al Moshe v'al Aharon. Vayomru alehem. They gathered together against Moshe and against Aaron and said to them. So I would, it would seem like they were both there, and then Moshe drops to the ground and Aharon doesn't. So let's see how Rashi and the Ramban are going to address this and see if we could explain, you know, why it's only Moshe and not Aaron. Ready? So far so good? Says Rashi as follows, Vayiplu al panav in Pasuk Dalet, Mipnei hamachlokes. Moshe fell as a result of the dispute. What does this mean, as a result of the dispute? That's why Moshe fell. Now the first thing I guess that we would say is that Rashi is excluding some of the other possibilities. He's not falling as a result of humility. He doesn't say that. And he doesn't say that he fell. What would be the other major category? It would have been in prayer. Rashi says he's not falling as a showing of prayer, but he's falling to the ground as a result of the dispute. What does that mean? Continues Rashi. Shekvar zeh biyodam sirchon revi'i. This is already the Jewish people's fourth shortfall. This is their fourth mistake, their fourth rebellion, so to speak. And Rashi lists them. They sinned with the ego, with a golden calf. And on that Moshe responded, Vayichal Moshe. Moshe beseeched Hashem on their behalf. That was number one. Then we had the complainers in the desert. Vayispalo Moshe. The Torah says again, Moshe davened on their behalf. Then Miraglim, last week's parsha, with the spies. Vayomer Moshe al Hashem v'shomu Mitzrayim. And again Moshe beseeched Hashem on their behalf and he said, but the Egyptians are going to hear that you slaughtered all the people in the desert, and what are they going to say about you? V'machlokas shel Korach nisrashu yadav. Now this fourth one, his hands were weakened. He just said, I have nothing left. Rashi says, a parable to a son of a king who rebelled against his father and has a certain advisor who is a big friend of this kid, of the prince. And each time the prince would do something wrong, the advisor would come into the king and say, listen, he's just a kid, he's making mistakes, let him off the hook, don't worry about him. So the first time the advisor came in and said, listen, let him off the hook, it's not a big deal. The second time the advisor comes in. The third time the advisor comes in, when this prince goes off a fourth time, Nisrashlu Yedeha Oyevahu, the advisor says, well, I can't do anything anymore. How many more times can I go into the king? He's not going to accept me anymore. That's it. I only get 3. So says Rashi, why has Moshe, what emotion would we then, out of all of our suggestions, according to Rashi, Moshe falls, why is it? Is it prayer, shock, humiliation, humility, despair? Which one according to Rashi?
Despair.
Why Moshe? Can we answer according to Rashi? He doesn't address it directly. Can we answer? Why is it Moshe and not Aharon? He's been the one doing all the talking until now. He's been the leader. He's been the one. He's the father of these children. He's been the one who plays the role of that advisor the other 3 times. So now it's Moshe who feels, I who am the only one in the position to beseech the king and say, let him off the hook one more time, I can't do it anymore. So according to Rashi, I think we would answer both questions with his one example that he says. What emotion is Moshe feeling? Despair. Why is it not Aharon who's falling? This is not his role. This is the role of Moshe as the leader of the people, the one who's been the intermediary all this time, beseeching Hashem on behalf of the shortcomings of the Jewish people. He senses the despair more than anybody else. He's the one who falls, not Aharon. That would be Rashi's approach as to why he's falling. Let's put that in the back of our mind because we're going to have to address and see. What I'd like to do is see how many different approaches will we find that are going to connect our 3 questions. Remember our 3 questions. Why does Moshe fall and not Aharon? Why does he wait till the morning? And how does he know to do this process? So let's see if we could weave them together. But our starting point in Rashi is, why is Moshe falling? It's a feeling of despair. And that's why he's falling alone and not anyone else. Let's throw out 2 more things and we'll see how we work with them. Listen to a Ramban. This one I didn't have photocopied for you. Says the Ramban, why is it not Velo Vayiplu? Why is it only Moshe who's falling and not Aharon? Listen to our Ramban. Ki Aharon v'moisro v'kedushoso lo ona dover b'chol ha-machlokes hazu. We don't see Aharon responding once throughout this entire parsha. Even though the initial approach was against whom? Both Aharon and Moshe. Aharon never speaks. He never says a word the whole time. It's only Moshe. Says the Ramban, you want to know why? He was silent. Uchemoide shemaylos koirach gedola mima'ala. So in his humility, Aharon was as if he said, you know, Korach, you're really right. I'm really not equipped for this job. I'm not the greatest person who should be here. Who also kidvar Moshe. I'm just doing what Moshe asked me. But Aharon never felt the gumption to stand up there and say, no, of course it's me. You know, Moshe asked me to be the Kohen Gadol, so I said, of course, if the king asks me to be the Kohen Gadol, I'll be the Kohen Gadol. But now that someone's getting up there and saying, hey, how could it be Aharon? It should be me. Yeah, you're right, you really are qualified. You know, I'm not really anyone so special. The Ramban suggests that Aharon in his holiness and his Kedusha and in his humility was silent as if there's a valid claim that he's not the most qualified person for the job. And left Moshe to defend that it was Moshe's choice. And Moshe therefore is going to say, yes, it was me who did it because Hashem told me to do it. But Aharon himself is not going to step in because Moshe is the one who spoke to him and told him to do it. So he said, of course I'm going to do it, but I don't have anything to say about the matter. Yeah.
It seems to be a reversal of the characteristics here of Aharon and Moshe. Like, Aharon is a peacemaker. He should be like, listen, Korach, you know, Moshe really thinks you're a great guy and go back to, do the other way. You know, that's Aaron's characteristic. And Moshe's characteristic is humility.
Is the humility.
You know,
excellent point.
You are good. And, you know, it sounds backwards.
Okay, fair point. A fair point. But that's what the Ramban says, so we'll start over there. Now, so far, do we have an answer to the Ramban why Moshe fell? We have a hint. Because why is Aharon not falling? And the Ramban asks the question, it wasn't clear because I didn't read the whole thing. The Ramban says, why only Moshe and not Aharon? And it says, because Aharon didn't engage this dispute at all, out of his holiness and humility, simply said, you're right, maybe I'm not really, I'm just doing what I was told to do. So if the reason why Aharon doesn't fall is because he doesn't want to engage the dispute, where is there a hint, where is the Ramban going to go, why is Moshe falling? Out of all of our emotions, we had prayer, we had humility, we had humiliation, we had despair. What?
Despair.
Any guesses? Does any of those fit?
He's angry because his brother's position has come into dispute.
One second, you just added an emotion which we haven't seen.
Oh, excuse me.
Right? Have we seen Moshe? Have we seen Moshe angry?
Well, I'm going to be offending.
Okay.
Defending the right of his brother.
So on some level, that's where I want to go. It sounds like from the Ramban, Moshe's falling on the ground is part of a defense or response to Korach.
It's Aaron's job to touch the grapes.
Correct. And Moshe's falling in some form of a supplication before him. Now, when last week's Parsha, for those who have an excellent memory, would have noted after the Meraglim come back and the spies come back and the Jewish people fall for their story, what's Moshe and Aharon's first response? Anyone remember? It's on page 802. Look at the very bottom of the page on 802. That's right. Look at verse 4 and 5 on page 803. They sure did, right? We find this again. You remember the Ramban comments over there?
No.
You don't know? You didn't see it last week? Says the Ramban, Vayipo Moshe va'aron al paneim, because they saw, says the Ramban, that the people wanted to appoint another leader and head back to Mitzrayim. These two righteous individuals, Moshe and Aharon, bowed down before them and said, do not go through with this. They bowed before them as if to stop them and plead with them before them.
To protect the people.
So the Ramban over there comments that the bowing down before them was in supplication to the people before whom they were addressing. Now, if we borrow from that, we would find a similar thing over here. Rashi wrote the reason why they bowed down was out of despair, that it was only Moshe. He was the one who always was in charge, and now he said, I can't do anything more, it's over, it's too many times already. The Ramban doesn't comment anything. All that he comments is that Aharon did not bow down because he wasn't engaging, so it would sound like Moshe, in engaging the people, was bowing down somehow before them to supplicate before them and get them to stop, as he then continues and says, we're going to do this test. So what would it sound like? So far, so good? Is it getting too confusing?
A bit.
A bit?
I was thinking about something about, you know, when his son died and he was quiet,
Right.
I don't know if there's any...
Well, again, you're pointing out a nice pattern that you see Aharon in the face of this adversity. One time it's losing his own sons, and here it's where his authority is being challenged, had that trait of silence.
Where Moshe is like Dianu, you know.
Very interesting.
It seems like probably when these kinds of things happen to him, he thinks this is something that Hashem is doing to him, and he's quiet. He accepts it.
Excellent. Now, if we wanted to work through Aharon's responses, where we see sometimes Aharon is the Rodev Shalom, the Ohev Shalom, the pursuer of peace, and now we see two other examples where he's silent in the face of challenge, we could do a nice little thesis and a study on the character traits of Aharon and how he's responded, which is very nice. What's that?
These are personal issues. We're making peace between two people.
Right. Or him helping out two others.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm going to move past this for today, but those are nice insights into what we see from Aaron. I'm running out of time. Let's move forward. Let's go to the next question that we had. Why does Moshe wait till the morning? So he falls on his face, and then he begins by saying there's going to be a test, and he says, let's wait for the morning. Says Rashi, it's on the last two lines on your page if you want to read it inside. Boiker v'yeda ata, right now, eis shichrus hulanu. Now is a time of shichrus is drinking alcoholic beverages. It's afternoon, we've eaten our meals. You would often drink wine. A Kohen was not permitted to do the service in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, or in the Mishkan, in the desert, after consuming any wine. So Rashi says, Moshe's response is, since part of the test is going to be an offering up in the Mishkan, now is not an appropriate time to do it because some of you might not be fit for that. Some of you might have had something to drink during lunch. So we're going to wait till the morning. Apparently. Maybe they can make their mun taste like wine. Says Rashi, V'hu haya miskaven lidchoysam shema yachzeru. What was Moshe's real intention? To push them off and give them time, maybe they'll be chozer, they will move back from their affront, from their test, from their challenge. So again, Rashi's not connecting at all his falling on his face with why he waits till the morning. Two separate concepts. Why does he fall on his face? Total despair. I can't believe I have to deal with this again. I cannot approach Hashem anymore with this. Why do we wait till the morning? Because with no other choice, I can't beseech Hashem anymore. So maybe if I let them just cool off a little bit, they'll come to their senses. So why does Rashi say we need to wait till the morning? Simply because, don't do it now. Maybe you'll return. Maybe you'll come back. Let's do one more Rashi, and then we'll read the Ramban. So third big question that we had was, how did Rashi know to do this? How did he know that this should be the test? So Rashi comments, if you flip the page on 822, it's Pasuk Vav, six lines down. Zos asu, if you want to read it inside, I will translate. Zos asu kulachem machtos. So the test was, take the fire pan. Says Rashi, ma ra'a loymer lehem kach. Rashi asks our question, where did Moshe see to do this? Where did he get this from? Amr lehem, bedarkei ovdei kaychavim, in the ways of idolatrous people, yeshni musim harbi, there are many different types of priests, v'kumrim harbi, different types of services and priests, v'ein kulam, but they don't all work in the same place. They have different houses, different places where they go. On Anu, however, us, we have only one God, Aaron Echad, one Ark, Torah Achas, one Torah, Mizbeach Echad, one altar, the Kohen Gadol Echad, and only one Kohen Gadol. You, says Moshe to them, are 250 people who are all claiming that you should be the high priest. You should all be the Kohen Gadol. Afani wrote Sebekach, maybe I also want to be that. So he says, I'll tell you what we'll do. This continues Rashi. This is what Moshe says to them. Hovachem tashmish chaviv mikol. The most endearing of all the services in the tabernacle was that of the incense. And we can talk about why that is. Let's just leave that at face value. Says Rashi, that was the most special. That's what Hashem loves the most. The burning of the ketores, the burning of the incense. V'sam hamoves nosun b'seicho. But however, you have to be careful. It's very dear to Hashem, but it's very dangerous. Because if you do it inappropriately, what happens to you? You're finished. What's my proof, says Rashi? That's Nadav Avir. That's what happened to the sons of Aharon. Therefore, he warned them, the one who will be chosen will survive. The rest of you will all die. So says Rashi, how did Moshe know to choose this one? Or why did he choose this one? So Moshe said to himself, this is the most special of all of the services. Let's have everybody do this. Because it has that double-edged sword to it. It has being very dear to Hashem, but as a result of that, it's also very powerful and very dangerous. So Moshe says, in the morning, I'm going to give you time to think about this, and I'm going to warn you. In the morning, this is what we're going to do. Everybody's going to do it. Only one of you is going to make it out. And the rest of you, who will now have offered a service which was not called for, you will all die.
So why would they agree to this?
Excellent question. That's Rashi asks that further. Like, what were they thinking? The Sifrei Musar, those the works of Musar, all talk about how when a person gets something in his head, when they want to challenge authority, you are sometimes so blinded that each one of these 250 all thought it was them. Mm-hmm. 250 people at the same time were convinced it's me and not him and not him and not him, and it's not even Aharon. That they were all willing to go through with such a process. It's sort of an insight into the workings of the human mind, and it's a schmooze unto itself, which I'm going to leave aside because I want to cover some other things. But that's the kind of question where you're like, what were they thinking?
I mean, I think it's obvious that in some ways that Moshe picked this precisely because everyone saw what happened to Nadav and Abihu, mm-hmm. and that's why it's so amazing that they
still went ahead with it.
Because they saw the people who were actually Kohanim do the wrong thing and die, and they're not even Kohanim, and they're going to do it.
Excellent.
How bad they wanted to be.
Yeah. Or how badly Korach had convinced them that Moshe had done something wrong, and that they were convinced that he had done something, and you're like, you're willing to pursue anything. But as we take Rashi's approach, we're going to learn Ramban in a second, through these psukim, Rashi does not connect our three questions in any way. Meaning to say, why does Moshe fall on his face? That's the emotion of total despair that Moshe had. I've interceded on their behalf three times already. I can't do it anymore. And therefore, in despair, he falls on his face. That's not addressing them. He's not talking to them. He's simply, on his own, he crumbles from the weight of, I can't believe this is happening. Now he addresses the people and he says, let's wait till the morning. Sit on this. Think about it. Maybe, he's hoping, maybe you'll fall back and you'll come to your senses and not go through with it. But if you're going to go through with it in the morning, be forewarned. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do a fire pan incense offering, which is the most dear to Hashem and the most powerful. The one who survives will clearly be the one who's been chosen. And the rest of you are all going to die. Now the one question that Rashi leaves out is, how did Moshe know to do this? Rashi explains to us why Moshe chose the incense, but he doesn't explain, how did Moshe know that even Aaron was allowed to do this? Maybe all of them are going to die, even Aaron, because nobody had the rights to do this. So let's remember, the Ramban is going to say four things, and I want to learn from you inside, you can just pass it around. I want to show you how sometimes in a few words, the Ramban says many things. And we'll go through what he has to say. I'm sorry, can't pull it up. Sorry, one of the pages is upside down, the back half. Okay. Things are enough?
Yeah.
Just barely? One page, it's double-sided. Excellent, okay. Let's learn number one. The Rabbi is going to say four things, and then let's go through them. I hope we'll have the time to do that. Number one. Now, it was Moshe himself who thought of this procedure. What question is the Ramban answering? How did he get this? Where did he get this from? Says the Ramban, Moshe himself thought of this. and chose the burning of the incense as the test to show who was suitable for the priesthood, rather than any of the other offerings, because he had already seen in the case of Nadav and Avihu that when they offered strange incense before the Eternal, they were burnt. Therefore, he permitted Aharon to burn the incense because of the special needs of the time. Period. First approach of the Ramban. Where did Moshe get this idea from? Himself. This sounds very much like Rashi, right? Why did he choose this? Because he saw how special it was, he saw how powerful it was, he saw what happened to Nadav and Avihu. Now, the one question that Rashi did not answer is, how did he let Aharon do it himself? The Ramban adds that in his first statement. How did Moshe know that he was allowed to allow Aharon to do this? That's the last phrase, because of the special needs of the time. This is a phrase which is known as a Hora'os Shah. He gave a special issue, a special ruling, which was only allowed given the circumstances surrounding it. And you find the Gemara talks about this often, where a local Beis Din or the national Beis Din in Yerushalayim will often give a ruling against the general procedures, and they will do so because the times require it. It is necessary because of circumstances to bend the rules, and we have no other choice. Says the Ramban, and this sounds exactly Rashi's approach. Moshe falls in despair. He tries to stall for time. And then he says, but if you're not going to go for that, if you're going to force me to go through with this, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have an extra incense offering, which was not prescribed by Hashem, which is not allowed. And I know it's powerful. When you do it, you die. And I'm going to have Aharon do it as well. What right do I, Moshe, have to do this? Because I have a rebellion on my hands. And I need a method for Hashem to choose the one whom He chooses. And I'm going to put Aharon in, put his neck out as well. Who gave Moshe the authority to do this? Moshe did. Moshe on his own took this step. Had Aharon, Korach, and all of these 250 people do this. And said, I trust that this is going to work out. And that Hashem will choose the one whom He's going to choose. What we call a Hora'a Shah, because of the needs of the time, He went ahead and did something which was otherwise not permitted. Yeah?
This is, in a way, a demand.
A demand of?
Hashem.
Correct. Now, I'll hold that thought. When the Ramban gives his second approach, he's going to say, he's going to add something which will also address his first approach. But you're 100% correct. In the way that the Ramban is learning right now, which seems to be the way Rashi is saying it as well, as a response to the challenge that Moshe is being given right now, he sort of says, Hashem, I need you here. I need you. And he comes up with something which is otherwise not permitted, asks Aharon to do it. Now remember what he's asking. How did Aharon's sons die? Aharon's sons! Same way. And Moshe tells Aharon, I want you to do this. Now, when you think about what's going on right now, the intensity of what's happening, Aharon is now about to do the same thing that his two sons died just a short while before, as the test whether or not Hashem is going to accept his or anybody else's. Moshe is choosing something very powerful on his own, as you're saying, demanding of Hashem. Because what if Hashem wouldn't go with this? What if Hashem would say, no, no dice. You bring incense, when I don't ask it, everybody dies. And Aharon would die in the same way as his sons would die. What's then left of Moshe? Right? Forget him. What are the people going to do to Moshe? So according to this approach, which seems to be the approach of Rashi as well, is Moshe is almost demanding of Hashem, for my authority, which you gave me, I need you to do this. 100%. Now, listen to Ramban's second approach, which he only adds with the word or. So he's going to give a new approach. Or, maybe it was the daily incense of the morning, which he used to burn when he kindled the lamps, according to the ordinance. Now he's saying something very powerful. He's changing. Remember the question, we have three major questions. Why does Moshe fall? Why did he wait till the morning? And how did he know to do this? How did Rashi answer the question of waiting till the morning? Stalling for time. The Ramban here is going to give a variation of that. Why did Moshe wait till the morning? That was the time that you offer the incense. What's the Ramban changing in this approach from the first approach? He's switching from what Elaine suggested to what Eleanor suggested. Is there, in the Ramban's second approach, was Moshe willing to make Aharon, his brother, offer a incense offering which was not commanded in the middle of the day? Absolutely not. Because what happens when you do that? You die. Says the Rabban, you know why Moshe waited till the morning? Because what happens in the morning? You do the incense offering. So Moshe said, wait till the morning. We're going to have an incense offering competition tomorrow at its appropriate time, and Hashem will choose. And now the Ramban adds, and Moshe trusted that Hashem would confirm the word of his servant and perform the counsel of his messengers. Because now Moshe is putting himself out there and saying, we were supposed to do this anyway. How do I know that there's going to be a test that somehow Hashem is going to show me through what was supposed to happen and only accept Aaron's and not everybody else's, even though everybody else is also doing it at the right time? So Moshe says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do a test. So he's going to change. He's going to say, the reason why Moshe waits till the morning is connected with the test that he does. In Rashi's approach and Ramban, they're totally disconnected. Wait till the morning is just a cooling off period, and the reason why I do the incense is because it's a powerful test. According to the Ramban's second approach, wait till the morning because the test that I want you to do is the incense. And I will never ask anybody to do that outside its appropriate time. So therefore, wait till the morning, do it, and I trust that Hashem will listen to me in my creating this test and only accept Aaron's and nobody else's, even though everybody's now offering it in the right time. So in this approach, the Ramban connects the waiting till the incense. It's really the same thing. Wait till the morning because that's the appropriate time to do it. So far, so good? Let's go further. According to both of these approaches, why is Moshe falling on his face? So according to Rashi, why is he falling on his face? Despair. According to the Ramban, we could suggest based on why they fell on their faces last week after the Meraglim, it's almost the beginning process of addressing them. Like, you challenged my authority, I've fallen on my face almost to address you, but the Ramban doesn't say so explicitly. Continues the Ramban number 3. And some scholars, here he quotes the Ibn Ezra, and when Moshe heard he fell on his face, that he did so in order to inquire of God to know what to do. This is one of the other possibilities. Why did he fall on his face? In prayer. In that phrase was not despair, it was not humility, it was not supplication before Korach. That was what the prophets do. He fell on his face. And even though the Torah doesn't describe to us prayer, the Torah doesn't describe to us Hashem saying to Moshe, speak to Korach and tell him what to do. Hinted at in that phrase that Moshe fell on his face, says the Ibn Ezra, quoted here by the Ramban, is actually Moshe supplicating before Hashem saying, what should I do? What in the world am I supposed to do? Continues the Ramban. But it is mentioned only in Moshe's account of the people. Later we will see, and then he was told in the morning the Eternal will make known. That was actually Moshe. The first two approaches we learned, Moshe made this up. Moshe took the authority upon himself and said, I'm going to make up a powerful test and trust that Hashem will show me correct. In this third approach, it goes all the way back to the first question we asked. Why did Moshe fall? That was in prayer. Hashem told him to do this test. Moshe was not going out on a limb at all. He wasn't making up any test. He wasn't asking him to do anything. Hashem told him, this is what we'll do. We'll do an incense test. It'll be tomorrow, that's when I want it. And Moshe is simply following the instructions of Hashem. The rest of this paragraph, the Ramban shows various other instances in the Torah where a prophecy was given, but it's not recorded to us. It's sort of given shorthand, like it is over here. Moshe fell on his face, and he speaks, and the Torah just leaves out that in between that, Moshe had a communication with Hashem, and Hashem told him what to do, and then Moshe fulfilled his responsibilities. But in this approach, all three questions just flow seamlessly. Why did Moshe fall? In prayer. Why did he wait till the morning, and why did he do the incense? That's what Hashem told him to do. So this approach goes the easiest as far as dealing with our textual problems as to what's going on. What big textual problem is it leaving out? Is that we weren't told that there was any communication between Hashem and between Moshe. So in order to answer all three so seamlessly, you have to sort of say that there was a communication which wasn't mentioned, but then the other three flow naturally. So quick summary, what do we have? We have Rashi's approach. Moshe falls in despair, waits till the morning to stall, and does the incense offering, which is his own suggestion, just putting himself out there saying, this is what I want to do. According to the Ramban's second approach, the reason why he waits to the morning is because he wanted them to do the incense offering, which is it at its normal time. He was not willing to go so far out as to have them do something which was not requested of them. And he trusted that even though they were doing things at the right time, Hashem would listen to him and make a test out of it and only accept Aharon's and nobody else's. The third approach is that Moshe fell on his face was actually in tefillah. That was part of the prayer. There was a communication that was going on. And through that, Hashem told him, wait till the morning and do this test. So far, so good. Confusing enough. One last approach, and with this we will close. Number four on the other side. My own opinion in this matter, says Ramban, what I like the best is as follows. Moshe's command to Korach and his company to take the censers and burn incense, and in that which he said to Aharon, take the fire pan and put fire therein, is that the hand of Eternal was upon him in these matters, and it is this which is called Ruach HaKodesh. It was not a conversation between Moshe and Hashem. It was not a nevuah in which there was that dialogue. It is what we refer to as Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. No communication, not a prophecy in which there is Hashem speaking to the prophet. There's a lower level concept in which a person is simply inspired with what is translated as a divine spirit. In that, and he says, as was happened with the books of David and with Shlomo, which were written with Ruach HaKodesh, the book of Tehillim, the book of Mishlei, the books which we have in as our Tanakh, there was no prophecy. It wasn't Hashem spoke to King Shlomo and told him, write this. Hashem spoke to David HaMelech and said, write Tehillim. But they were sort of inspired with this divine inspiration. Says the Ramban, Moshe here had that. Now, this is an interesting approach. The Ramban is nestling himself in between the first and third approach. The first two approaches were Moshe on his own made up a test, told Aharon to bring an incense offering on his own, either in the middle of the day, or at least not during the regular incense offerings, or as part of it, but he made up the test on his own. The third approach says he did nothing on his own. Hashem told him exactly what to do. The Ramban says what I think makes the most sense. Now again, think about why would the Ramban reject the third approach of the communication of between Moshe and Hashem? Doesn't say it. Why would he reject the first two approaches that Moshe made it up on his own? He doesn't like that. Right? That he would ask Aharon, his brother, to do the very same thing that his two sons died doing. He doesn't like that. Says the Ramban, therefore, what makes the most sense to me is that Moshe was inspired by Ruach HaKodesh and came to this conclusion. And therefore, Vayipol al panav, he's free to say possibly what he said from last week's parasha. That was part of his supplication before the people. Waiting to the morning might be part of the divine inspiration. It might be a stalling tactic. That I don't know. But the idea of coming up with the incense offering, where did Moshe get that from? Says Ramban, what I like the best is not like Rashi said. Rashi said he made it up because he knew it was powerful. Ramban rejects that and says, too much. I'm not comfortable with that. I think it was just an inspiration of Ruach HaKodesh that Moshe had, that this would be the appropriate test. That's what he asks Aaron to do. That's what he asks the other 250 to do, and that's what they come up with. Just a few approaches here as to these couple of verses. But what we do, we have four or five verses. But that's how the Mefarshim deal with the various questions, weaving them together. Some of them are, you know, separate approaches. Some of them are weaving them together, the same approach, working them through. All right, this is a little bit more technical than usual, but I hope it came out clear as far as
yes, good.
Some of the approaches.